economic developer. And I was born and raised in Chicago on the South Side, Hyde Park. And I've spent, I guess, 26 years involved in community activism, community economic development, community housing, community organizing, institutional development, that sort of thing. I guess started as an 18-year-old as a tenant landlord mediator in my own community and conducted my first rent strike at that age. And it was an experience that changed my life and got me to think that where people live is really important to them and that I wanted to have an impact on in what I did in people's lives that I could see. Different kinds of jobs, worked for a politician, kind of like John Marty here in Chicago, and I ended up at Bethel New Life. How many people have heard of Bethel New Life? You might have heard of it because it's one of the nation's largest community development corporations, nonprofit CDCs, and it is sponsored by a Lutheran church. And not only that, it's a Lutheran church in a low-income African-American community on the west side of Chicago. West Garfield Park, one of the poorest communities really in the country. And I was the first director of economic development there back when it wasn't quite so big and successful as it is now. And I found in the course of my work, and you know, we created the first housing that had been built in that community in 30 years since the massive disinvestment and community change happened in the 60s after the King riots and so forth. We started new co-op textile businesses with sweat equity of the community residents. And basically, if there was a cutting-edge kind of approach to community development, we'd be doing it at Bethel New Life. There's plenty of seats up here, too, by the way, folks. And I found, if I went around, I talked to bank executives, which we did a lot because of the Community Reinvestment Act, or if I talked to my peers and colleagues, and friends, or if I talk to church groups where we're selling affordable housing investments, that the one question that everybody always wanted to know is, well, does it work? Can we make a difference? And, you know, if you're selling charity to people in a church group on Sunday morning, the answer is yes, we make miracles, and then they say, how do we help them make your check out too, right? And that's good, and I'm not criticizing that at all, but in another sense, It was a funny question to me because, I was working with these tenants in this slum building in my own neighborhood, and the slumlord, had stopped paying all the bills, so the gas was shut off, of course. And there were senior citizens who needed 5 hot baths a day just to live, you know, as a part of their home health care and so forth, and of course people felt that if the gas was going to be shut off, then their homes were going to be lost next. And so they discussed this question, and you know, to go up against a slumlord, a landlord, that takes guts, that takes courage, because you know, they can retaliate, they can evict you, they might win even if they're wrong. So people asked that question, but the answer was always, well, what else can we do? You know, what choice do we have? I mean, this is our home, we got to make a stand here. And the risk of inaction is always greater than the risk of action. So that was a simple answer to that question. But the more I thought about it, the more I thought that this can we make a difference question was really the key question. And it's the thing that we worry about, not just in my corner of this part of community economic development, but in so many things in our lives. All the work that you all just described, for example, and in families and in individual personal development and so forth. So I started to think about how the status quo perpetuates itself and then how we get into these cycles that are so often so hard to break out of. So that's the subject of the course for the week. This is a kind of an overview. It's wrong. I had to change it after coming here, so get your pencil out and make the changes. This is what we did all last week. And I can talk to you about any of this stuff anytime you want. We'll bring some of these things in as well. Except I had to move this session, session 2. So tomorrow, Tuesday, we will do institutional dynamics, roles and accountability. Okay? And then I switched these because as I was doing the sessions here, it seemed to make more sense. So Wednesday is church-based action. We'll talk specifically about how to use the churches as agents of social change. Thursday is about money, markets, economic development, all that kind of stuff. And then Friday is a really interesting thing we call the Change Clinic. I'm sorry, I forgot to turn the light off, so it's probably hard for you to read. But Friday we'll be doing the one that's listed down here as session number 9, Change Clinic. And that's where we're going to use examples taken from you. We'll be group consultants to some of us. And we'll try to use some of the ideas and lessons that we draw from our discussions here this week and from this change theory that I've been working on to generate some new ideas and hope for folks that are working on problems in their own institutions, families, communities, workplaces, or professions. Okay? Let me start this way. On top here is a poem. Who's a literary type of person? Somebody read this for us? One that says dynamics. Yeah, there's actually, I can't give you this one, but there should be someone that shared it. Somebody read it, please?
Yeah, I'll be back.
Please, thank you.
We expect the forest to hum, the predators to prey and prey to reciprocate, the light to set at night and summer set at late. We expect the forest to stay and change and stay. We expect the fire to crack, the heat to feed the flame to feed the heat, the next branch to catch and burn complete. We expect the fire to stay and change and stay. We don't expect the spark.
Thank you. So when people ask me, can we make a difference, I started looking for the spark. Let me tell you how I came up with it. Here was my first stab. College student. Snow's dynamic continuum model of social change. Let's do it quickly. This is fun. Imagine that this is a law going down the river, across a lake or whatever, and all of us are swimming behind it and pushing it. Okay? Now symbolically here, the left and the right hand side of this might be the left wing and the right wing, liberty and equality, consumption and sustainability, somewhere along there. And then here, the strength of our swimming is something I call legitimacy, which is some kind of combination of the number of people behind something and their kind of weight in society. And so what direction will this law go? Well, the more legitimacy pushing on this side of the law, which direction will it go? A little more that way, right? If you're over here and you stop swimming, which direction will the law shift? We're shifting back this way, almost as if somebody has started pushing. Right? Well, I like that one because there's personal responsibility in that. That says we're all in this together, right? And if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem, right? So I like that one. But it didn't capture a kind of a cyclical nature that I started to notice. And so I started thinking about pendulums. And John, you mentioned pendulums in your session this morning. You were talking about celebrity status and how ephemeral it is, and it might swing back the other way at some point. And at that point, 70s, early 80s presidential politics, think about it. Nixon won by a landslide, then was Watergate, then Carter won, the pendulum swung back this way, then back to Reagan and so forth. So I was using the pendulum and trying to think what makes the pendulum switch directions. But it's that lacks all the responsibility of this. A pendulum seems to swing back and forth almost by chance, or at least without our control. So I didn't like that either. So instead I started to think about cycles. And the first one really that I came up with, and the one I talked about first, was Chicago machine politics. And you know, for years we had, and now have again, a machine in Chicago. And the machine is a self-perpetuating cycle that perpetuates the status quo, a vicious circle. So in this system, the winner of an election get control over the spoils of government. Okay? Jobs, contracts, patronage, and so forth. And they use that to reward their friends and punish their enemies. Alright? And in the process, they can build a workforce, a campaign workforce, and a war chest. Alright? And in Chicago, City Hall is empty on election day. Right? Because everybody there got their job by being a campaign worker. So on election day, they're out getting their voters out to the polls so that they can win the election. So that was the first cycle that I thought about. Not really very different from other cycles where power begets power, where the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. You could think of third world countries. You could think of campaign finance, right? The winners are wealthy, and then they use the spoils of government to make more money and so forth, enacting the cycle. And I began to see these cycles all over the place. I began to see them not just in politics, but also in social circumstances, individuals, family, nature. I'm going to give you some of them now. I've got a bunch of them. And I can go on for a long time, but except we'll see if we can't generate some here as a group. So let me just try a few so that you get a taste of it. Well, Bethel, right? We were dealing with a cycle of poverty. An individual family, if you think of it that way, they're poor, start out poor. Poor family. Now, they've got lack of access to what? Housing, a stable place to live, health, care, or a good, healthy environment and promotion in the first place, child care, etc. They are then hardest hit by personal disasters, a broken leg, being fired and having to find a new job, not having a job in the first place, illness, whatever. And then they fall into another cycle where they're unable to get a hold of and to keep economic opportunity. So they stay poor. Last week we had Jonathan Frerich. He's going to do a forum. When is that? Tuesday? Tonight, is it? Go if you can. He's from Lutheran World Relief. He did a similar cycle, just talking about third world countries. Hurricane Mitch hit the folks in Nicaragua and Honduras. They were poor, so they lived on the worst land, which was hit hardest by the floods. And so they were poor. Right? What about at a lower level, smaller level, families? And I started thinking about substance abuse and all the stuff about codependency. Mm-hmm. So you've got a problem drinker. Bad behavior. Right? And how do people react? Well, what those people say, we're an expert at that, is that there's a variety of codependent reactions. And I gather that these can be aggressive, or they can be passive, or they can be passive-aggressive, and I guess it'd be kind of a game. If you react this way, I'll react that way. And so that results in some more family and social conflict. Could be friends, too. And the substance abusers find it harder to get out of their substance abuse addiction. What about just an individual? What's writer's block? Isn't that a bad cycle right there? I find that I can't write. You don't have to be a writer. It could be, my wife was saying, the thank you letters after your wedding or whatever. So then I'm frustrated that I can't write. So, because I'm frustrated that I can't write, I can't write. Right? And we all go through these individual kind of blocks to our own development. Exercise and weight. Right? I don't exercise, so I gain weight. It's harder to exercise when I overeat, so I don't exercise. So it could be an individual thing. How many people were at Marty's thing, John Marty's things? Okay, so we talked about celebrity politics. Let me do this one, John, correct me if I do this wrong. Media fluff was the term he used. Talking about non-substantive campaigns, sound bites, right? So that's leading to supporting non-substantive campaigns. And then he says, well, who's good at non-substantive campaigning might be celebrities. They're good at the sound bite, Ronald Reagan, right? So if they win, then that reinforces the media's coverage and the next campaign's organization as a substanceless campaign. I started to find these things then in more natural and scientific and artistic settings. I mean, the easiest one, the one everybody knows about, would be natural selection, right? Darwinian natural selection. So species are in a game or a race for survival and reproduction. There's some sort of a mutation, a spark, and some of the animals that later get to be called giraffes get taller necks so they can reach more food up on the top of the trees. They have healthier offspring. And so therefore they have got a greater chance of survival and reproduction. Right? That's the Darwinian model. They changed it now. And actually I've been reading a really interesting book by a guy named Werner Lowenstern, who is just really summarizing in a lot of ways the recent advances in biology and physics and so forth. Let me show you a picture in here. This guy says that basically the circular flow of information is what caused the origin of life and is what led to the development of more and more complex organisms really ever since the dawn of the universe. So let me show you this. He says, thanks, I don't know how to keep those things up there. Where are you? Something he calls the circus. Okay, could you kill that right hand switch back there? I'm gonna do a couple of heads here. Way back at the, yeah, that's good, thanks. Way back at the origin of the universe were fluctuations of energy. Those fluctuations of energy over billions of years led to asymmetric molecules, which led to the development of cells, which led to the development of proteins, RNAs, and DNA, and in each case, they are creating information, and then a positive feedback loop, creating more information at the next stage, and it's something he calls the circus, the flow of information through the reproduction of cells and organisms over time, so we grow from amoebas to the wonderfully complex organisms we are today, and maybe some more complex ones. I found that there. How about another one? Think of the Big Bang. What about a spark, you know? That's the mother of all sparks. That's got to be when something happened. But then if I look in Stephen Jay Hawking's book, what's it? Brief History of Time. You heard about this one? And here's his diagram of the evolution of the universe. Okay? And I can just read this to you. Up here is the Big Bang. Boom! Increasing imaginary time, size of the universe increases with time to a maximum size, but then it starts to decrease. And I see it's kind of fuzzy here. And time starts to go backwards into something called the Big Crunch. And then it happens all over again, a big cycle of information repeating itself. In all of these cases, what we're seeing is that the positive reinforcement, what the computer people call a positive feedback loop, what most of us might call a vicious circle, a self-reinforcing cycle over time, has got a lot of power and makes it difficult to change over time. And so I started to think that maybe that was part of what was causing not only the challenge in a community like West Garfield Park, but also what was causing folks to think about, you know, can we make a difference? Can we buck the system? Can we go up against the odds? Because we know that the status quo has got the odds stacked for it. So I started to think about ways that might happen. Before I do that, though, what I'd like to do is start to get your involvement here. I'd like to break into groups, real small groups, let's say three, okay? And what I'd like you to do in your groups of three is to share, each person one thing, an example of a cycle that repeats itself, of a status quo perpetuating itself somehow over time. You can do it. I know you can. We've done it in this group before. So just break into groups of three, and then I'm going to want you to report back from these groups and talk about how the status quo perpetuates itself. Just name or briefly describe a cycle that you shared in the group.
Solving third world debt.
Solving third world debt. And just tell us a little bit, why is that a cycle?
Because the more they borrow to put into their country from the World Bank, they can't repay because they can't get out.
Borrow more, you can't afford to pay. It's a two-step cycle, right?
Social injustice.
Is that fair? Another one.
Because they actually cancel the debt then, don't they usually?
Jonathan Frerich. Let's ask him about that. Jubilee 2000. That's all about the... No, he's not here. He's the guy from Lutheran World Relief who's given the forum tonight. And ask him about Jubilee 2000, which is a program to cancel all third world debt in the year 2000. But I don't think they generally do that, no. I think they build it up. Another one.
I tell your parents... less willing, less able to give to distressed children. Kids get more distressed. Parents get some more distress. Trying to cope with more extreme behavior.
Okay, parent tired. Parent stressed. All right. Kids.
Distressed.
Okay.
Yes.
So, parents more tired.
Right.
I don't know, something like that. Okay. No? Something changed?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Another one?
Barrio. We talked about barrio financing. Where, the
what financing?
Barrio in the world.
Barrio financing.
Barrio. From San Antonio.
Yeah, I defer to you. You know how to pronounce that. I don't. Okay. Yeah.
Individual doesn't have a good enough job, he can't get credit. So he came from a bank or a mortgage company, so he finds a doctor that's willing to make him a loan at 18%.
Yeah.
Well, then he gets the loan and makes 6 months of payments, and then he defaults and he loses the property. And
It's not much unlike the third world that up here.
That's right.
Pretty darn similar. Isn't that funny how that works? What's another one? You all had four. What about one of you?
Sure. Second one.
Actually, a lot of these are economic ones.
And yeah.
The economic disparities grows that way too. If you're well off, you may have better skills and training as parenting. You have more money to send them to better schools. They get better education, have better contacts, or better jobs.
Okay.
Produce
so
more money.
More money. Better education. Better job, more economic opportunities, more money, like that.
And the opposite, if you're low income, you may spiral down.
Okay. And you could say this is the positive cycle that you'd like to spin out of poverty, right? Go that way. And speaking of, you had a positive one, right?
Yes, yes. Taking people to Central America, for example, on a valuation, and then they being transformed by the experience coming back. And then sharing that, and then that generates more people that go. And a better understanding of the international debt. So
sharing experience. And why does it help?
I did the same thing like that, but on Holden Village.
Okay, good.
I go and share about Holden Village.
I love it. Yeah, I think Holden Village has many cycles. So sharing experience. And that gives people some hope and vision. And so then they want to take action. And then their action results in this. Yeah, I think that's like the main one. That's kind of the point of this whole class. So let's do Holden Village in the same version. Go ahead.
You come to Holden Village, you enjoy it, you go back out into the real world and tell everybody about it, and they decide to come, and it perpetuates this place.
Yeah. Snowball effect, another word for it. Anybody else? Yeah, your group didn't have him yet.
Look,
Oops.
This is a different kind of model than you're using here. I don't know whether it's useful.
Good, let's do it then.
It's a more of a reactive cycle.
Okay.
Where I'm thinking, from my professional viewpoint as a land use planner, I do long range planning.
Yeah.
And the trend, the current wisdom is, how can we reinstall community by the way that we design, the way that we build community.
Uh-huh.
And so after going from a couple or 100 years ago of the small town where everybody knew each other and helped each other to the cars where everybody urban sprawl and nobody knew their neighbors, now we're going back again. So it is kind of a cycle, but it's more of a
getting
wrong. What can we go back to or like better?
So it's sort of development is growth over here, and here development is community or something. Hmm?
Well, I guess I was seeing the cycle from the original organic or the historical organic community, and then
so it starts
to
here. Then it went here, and then it went back to here.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that happens a lot. I mean, that kind of was what I was saying about the pendulum thing. And there's often a sense that, you know, you kind of shoot past and then you come back again. And maybe we went too far this time, and let's get back to some of what we did before.
Yeah, like novelty. Novelty with the automobile.
Yeah.
Or novelty with the computer.
Uh-huh.
And it seems like we pursue that for a while, and then you kind of see the end result of it, where we lose ourselves, or we lose something that was also more important than swing back.
Which is kind of what you were saying about celebrity, that celebrity is novelty. And that it's, if it's only because it's new, then it wears off. And I mean, we're swinging back. My group here.
Well, she had education, and she had exercise, and trying to go down, and you had parenting.
Mm-hmm. Do the parenting one. Is it different from this one?
Well, I thought of parenting in that the child wants attention, so then they act out in a negative way, and then the parent reacts, and that reaction encourages that child to continue the negative attention game.
It is like this one, only backwards, right? Instead of the parent being tired to begin with, it's the kid's negative behavior in the beginning. What was education?
The more education you get, the more you want to learn, and so.
Great. Excellent. Mm-hmm. All right, so you get the idea, and these are pretty diverse group of examples. So then, where does the spark come from? Now you notice, not all the cycles are negative. And in fact, in some situations, and some people I read, and I read all over the place, I'll be reading economic development one day, and then physics the next, and just looking through these cycles, and I read this guy, Hawkins, and we'll read for him later. His whole idea is that cycles are good because that's what nature does, right? And so what we gotta do is try to get business into cycles, right? And so he's thinking about environmentalism. But let me read you this one, because this is about art. This is Harry Belafonte when he was interviewed by Cornel West in this new book that I took out, Restoring Hope. And it's just a bunch of interviews, conversations on the future of Black America. Here's Harry Belafonte. Talking about, really when he was about 15, the only art I knew of was art that propagandized and told stories of the human condition. My earliest knowledge of the people of Africa, for instance, was really through Tarzan movies, about this place called Africa, these people of color who were steeped in ignorance, steeped in folly, and were not redeemable except when the great white hero came swinging through the trees and landed in the midst of them to give them direction and describe life as they should aspire to it. For a long time, then, I thought of Africa as a place I really did not want to be. Those were people I would just as soon not know. And it was strange that so many people in my own community looked like them, and how lucky they were that they had white leadership to help them. So then, it's fascinating, talks about Haile Selassie being in the news and how that shaped him, and about local media, they had the African-American newspapers in Harlem where he was growing up, and his mother. But the first art thing he talks about is seeing a war movie with Humphrey Bogart called Sahara. And one of the soldiers is an African, not an African American, a Sudanese, played by Rex Ingram. And the black man reminded me very much of Haile Selassie. He had great dignity, he was very articulate, and he was not at all in anything he did in this film subservient. I watched him very closely because I'd never seen him or anyone like him on the screen before. And then the character sacrifices himself for the cause in an act of heroism. This had a profound effect on me. I had never ever seen a black man kill a white man, certainly never as an act of great heroism and nobility for which he was embraced by white folk. It was then that I realized what the power of acting could do. It was no small moment for me because it convinced me that I should do everything that Rex Ingram did. Of course, he did go on to the military and to a great acting career where he went on to aspire to. So that was the spark. Let me just do the cycles on that one. Bam. So to begin with, you have a situation where the whites controlled the media and art, and images of Africans and African Americans were negative and subservient. And the public then values and accepts these images, and the white leadership and art that produces it, so they produce and control all the art. Then there was a spark, and the spark was he viewed an alternative picture of his own community. Imagined a new role for himself, and he reflected that new role in his own action. Kind of a circle of hope and vision and action. And I think that's really key. I think to break out of bad cycles, we got to put in new cycles. The cycles are so powerful that you have to use cycles to be a cycle. And I don't know if that's a rule, but it certainly is something that I've observed. Something that we can talk about as we discuss this week. So what? Why do we learn about cycles? First of all, the personal is political. We're all involved in cycles. And so it isn't just a question of, oh wow, you did this on a dirty street corner in Chicago, but it's all about if we know and experience how we can make change in our own lives, in our own communities, in our own families, then we're a part of that and we can understand that in others. We can understand change everywhere by understanding change in our own lives. We try to replace bad cycles with positive ones and try to be able to tell the difference between the two. We try to replace racism and ignorance with culture and learning. Replace fear and hate with faith and love. Replace consumption and degradation with cooperation and sustainability. And throughout, to replace silence and violence with hope and action. And what we get from that is a mutual support. We're part of a larger effort, locally and globally, you know, think global, act local. We get vision, we get a sense of what change might look like, right? We get a spark, we can find a source of change. We're going to spend a lot of time doing that this week. And then we also learn how to crystallize, how to hold on to change once we've created it. So then, what we're going to do over the course of this week is look at things like the scope. What looks like something that's unchangeable and unpredictable in one scope can be viewed as part of a larger or a smaller cycle. The nice one is earthquakes. We had the guy, the geologist, talk about earthquakes in Holden Village last week. Well, when an earthquake hits, it seems like a one-time cataclysmic event if you're looking right here. But he's talking about geologic time, and he's talking about plate tectonics and the bubbling of the magma underneath, and it's just a big cycle to him. Or the Big Bang, you know? That's pretty big, far back, and so you're getting a Stephen Hawking in mind, and he's thinking about cycles of big bangs and big crunches. And when we talk about positive and negative cycles, we can look at when and how positive cycles can become negative, and then after it snowballs for a while, it can start to become something bad. And the flip side, how positive cycles can be used to break out a negative one. We look at roles and responsibilities, different roles of the positive, of the powerful and the weak, of the privileged and the disadvantaged, and how to cooperate for change with strategic roles. So if you think what we gotta do is change the system, not what we gotta do is for the privileged to help the weak, then we got different roles, and from different places, we can make different contributions to the effect of breaking out of the whole cycle. So what community organizers say is where you sit is where you stand, and we can talk about where we sit and how that makes a difference in where we stand. And most of all, what I'm interested in is what is that source of change, that movie with Rex Ingram, and how do we find that? And I think about that in two ways. I think about internal sources of change versus external sources of change. So the external, like the chemical catalyst that you put into a beaker to make something happen, and the internal, like asset-based community development, where what we're trying to do is use our own strengths to make development happen in our own communities instead of waiting for somebody from outside to do it. And we talk about the difference between acting on strengths versus acting on weaknesses, sort of working inside the system or outside the system, using the system's own spin, as it were, to create some spin for the new cycle, or trying to divert it altogether to create new kind of sources. And I have a couple of readings I just want to give you on that. Two different points of view about the use of the existing system to create change or not. Here's this guy, Hawkins. The gardening store developer, right? Hawkins and, you know what I'm talking about? Smith and Hawkins, right. So he's a proponent of what he calls the restorative economy, which is a kind of like, you're just smiling, okay. It's kind of like trying to make business be like the ecology, okay? So what he's saying is the restoration economy is organized in a profoundly different way. The economics of restoration is the opposite of industrialization. In a restorative economy, viability is determined by the ability to integrate with or replicate cyclical systems in its means of production and distribution. Complex and onerous regulations will be replaced by motivating standards. It would invert many fundamentals of the present system. That's how it's different. But it does not depend upon a transformed human nature. Within the system, in a restorative economy, there is a prospect that restoring the environment and making money would be the same process. As in nature, business and restoration should be part of a seamless web. Some businesses might get smaller but hire more people. Money can be made by selling the absence of a product or a service, like public utilities when they sell efficiency instead of power. Corporations can compete to conserve and increase resources rather than deplete them. So that's an example of a strategy acting on strengths. Now here is an article by Ellen Willis, who directs the Cultural Reporting and Criticism Program at New York University, a feminist critic writing in The Nation. And she's saying, American left politics generally works this way. As radical ideas gain currency beyond their original advocates, they mutate into multiple forms. Groups representing different constituencies respond to the new movement with varying degrees of support or criticism and end up adapting its ideas to their own agendas. With these modifications, the movement's popularity spreads, putting pressure on existing power relations. The liberal reformers then mediate the process of dilution, containment, and co-optation, whereby radical ideas that won't go away are incorporated into the system through new laws, policies, and court decisions. Once the radicals who are a real threat to the existing order have been marginalized, the right sees its opportunity to fight back, though. Conservatives, in their turn, become the insurgent minority, winning support by appealing to the still potent influence of the old reality, decrying the tensions and disruptions that accompany social change. Desperate to avoid isolation, the liberal left keeps retreating, moving its goalposts toward the center where ordinary people supposedly reside, but as yesterday's center becomes today's left, the entire debate shifts to the right. And in the end, despite all their efforts to stay relevant, the liberals are themselves hopelessly marginalized. And that's the sorry situation we're in right now. So her prescription, her spark here, says this: no mass left-wing movement has ever been built on a majoritarian strategy. On the contrary, every such movement has begun with a visionary minority whose ideas were at first decried as impractical, ridiculous, crazy, dangerous, and/or immoral. By definition, the conventional wisdom of the day is widely accepted, continually reiterated, and regarded not as ideology, but as reality itself. Rebelling against reality, even when its limitations are clearly perceived, is always difficult. It's not surprising, then, that those who stick their necks out to start social movements tend to be, in certain respects, atypical. Paradoxically, they are likely to have economic and social privileges that set them free from an overwhelming preoccupation with survival, and that will make them feel less vulnerable. Or conversely, they may already be social outcasts or misfits in one way or the other, and so feel they have little to lose. Yet rebellious minorities are really just canaries in the mine. When their complaints speak to widespread, if unadmitted, disappointments and desires, it's amazing how fast ordinary people's minds and the whole social atmosphere can change, as happened between the 50s and the 60s. Two different points of view. Which one's right? They're both right, aren't they? I don't know. You can have big fights about that, right? But that's not really what this class is all about. I'm not really here to talk about what's right and what's wrong, but what I am here to do is to say, how can we generate these sparks? What are the sources of them? And what difference does it make to our strategies for social change? So over the course of the week, we'll practice that, and we'll see what happens. And I develop a matrix like this that we'll try and test over time. And it will say, the source of spark, is it diverting, like Alan Willis says, get out of the whole system, because if you stay in the system at all, eventually it co-opts you back in. Or is it co-optative? Use some of the strength of the status quo to help create a new status quo. And then, question of, is the source external? Does it come from outside the system? Or is it internal? Does it come from inside the system? So when we talk about institutional dynamics, for example, we'll talk about the role of alternative institutions and of large constituencies and how they create pressures on large mainstream institutions to make a larger system, a broader perspective, that is more responsive to change and yet still gets production done. When we talk about church-based action, we'll talk about asset-based development, which is about using internal strengths to create a partnership list for creating partnerships between privileged and disadvantaged communities. And then when we do our change clinic, we'll use some examples that you have and see if they work and how they might apply, and what we can learn from each other. Because like I said before, I think this is the one. This one and over here, I think the real trick is that hope and action thing. That what really, you know, that the women in 47th and Drexel who were engaged in this rent strike didn't think that they'd be providing hope to people 15 years later out here in Western Washington, but they were. People down here in Central America didn't think that either. Each one of us struggles with these cycles of perpetuating status quo and figures out strategies from our own lives. And when we do that, we give hope to others. And when we give hope to others, they take action. And that action creates hope back to us and to other people. And that's a cycle that's worth building. So let's see if we can't do that this week. Questions? I got 5 minutes to spare. I'm doing good. Okay. Well, I don't know what to do. I finished early. Thank you for your time, and I hope to see you tomorrow. Tomorrow is Institutional Dynamics. I think I'm on at 10:45. Thanks very much.